Okay, I think we still have some people coming in, but we're going to go ahead and get started so we have as much time as possible this evening. I want to welcome you to Tuesday Evenings at the Modern. I'm Terry Thornton, and it is my great pleasure to be a part of this program. We have an exceptional lineup this fall. I hope you have been able to take advantage of the previous lectures and that you will mark your calendars for those that follow. The schedule is always available at the information desk, I think also in this little table that sits just outside the door, and it's also always available online. We'll be taking a break next Tuesday so you can all go and vote if you haven't already. We will return on November 11th with both Teresa Hubbard and Alexander Bursler, the artist featured in the museum's current No Room to Answer, a spellbinding exhibition that is curated by the Modern's Andrea Carnes. So on the 11th, arrive early to claim your seats, and then spend time in the exhibition before the lecture, because the galleries are open until 7 every Tuesday during the run of this lecture series. I've had a few opportunities to hear Teresa and Alexander speak on their work, and each time their passion and intellect is notable. I assure you, you do not want to miss this one, so make those plans now and spread the word. I made the same claim last week about tonight's lecture, and I think you will find me true to my word as you listen to Donald Moffitt's presentation of the ideas and practices that have led to his carefully produced, thoughtfully considered, and visually stunning works. These are works that challenge the realms and history of painting, verging on sculpture and multimedia productions that often serve as a means to a political or social end. As a founding member of Grand Fury, a 1980s AIDS activist collective, Donald has been described by the New York Times art critic Holland Cotter as having made some of the quietest, subtlest political art around. That was in Cotter's review of The Extravagant Vein, a 2003 solo exhibition at Marianne Boesky's gallery, where Donald's work is represented in New York. And then there is what might seem to be a contradicting review of Flesh, Donald's 2007 solo exhibition at Stephen Friedman Gallery in London, which was written by Roy Fox of Frieze magazine, in which he talks about the work as being painting used as a kind of aesthetic compressor, concentrating the very real concerns and complexities of identity politics and human sexuality into hard-hitting, high-tension visual experience. And I think you will see the reasoning for both writers in the work that Donald is sharing with us tonight. And if anyone is going to New York in the next couple of weeks, you can see what I understand to be a little of both in New York at the... you can see a little... I'm sorry, I lost my place. If you're going to New York the next couple of weeks, you can see what I understand to be a little of both, that is quiet and subtle and high tension, hard-hitting, in Donald's current exhibition, Easy Clean, at Marianne Boesky Gallery. If you go to that site, the press preview presents it as such, or the press release presents it as such. In addition, you might want to mark your calendars for next year, when a 2005 installation that Donald showed in New York titled Hippie Shit will be represented at the NGBK in Berlin. Or a little closer to home, the CAM in Houston is putting together a large survey of Donald's work in the spring of 2010, so we can all make plans for that. There are, of course, many more exhibitions and accomplishments to list, but for the sake of time, the point is that Donald has had a long and illustrious career that continues to dazzle as it poses the important questions of the day. So, and we are very fortunate, of course, to have him here to share a little of that with us tonight. So please join me in welcoming Donald Moffitt.
Thank you very much. Hearing, quoting those critics with a show up in New York, I immediately broke out in a sweat. I was, got through those. Let's hope I can get through this one. I'm going to show you a couple of these projects. Hippie Shit will be included. And I did want to just preface this. I think I also broke out in a sweat around the political and social, which you're going to get a lot of tonight. But, you know, the way I look at it, you know, everyone, speaking of another Texan, I grew up here in San Antonio. Rauschenberg, you know, we all adore and admire and, you know, art and life, etc. Well, Rauschenberg went around and he picked up all the trash and he made great art. I kind of go around and pick up the trash too, and it all happens to be newspapers, and I read it, and it kind of finds its way in. So I don't really see too much of a difference if it kind of somehow what gets me is the print on the found objects, you know, and so I am kind of involved in the news, but it is all still painting. So we're going to start with this work, which was a piece that I'm going to get the clock out here to keep us rolling along. The Incremental Commandments. It was a time when I was, you were hearing a lot about relative moralism and stuff like that, and I really still don't really know what that is, but I knew what I needed to do with it, and that was build a painting show of 10 paintings that were based on a little more than really a mathematical formula. But in the process of that, I wanted to kind of pull together a medieval concept of the mathematician, the priest, and the musician, and kind of swirl it all around. And so what we ended up with, this is Stephen's old space. It's changed a bit in London, but you only see 9 paintings because there's one right over here, which we'll get to, the 10th, the biggest. But these were all black paintings, variations on black, and they looked all similar to this. It's all extruded oil paint on linen on panels. And they were all kind of slight variations on black, this being kind of one of those slides that lies a little bit. This is a little brighter than it actually is, but this had a little copper in it. And what we did here was, this was the kind of graphic that led you into the show. And as I was reviewing this is from a few years ago, and I was like, I cannot explain that formula to you anymore, but Seamus could if Seamus was here. And Dorothy Papadakis, who's a fairly well-known organist, we went up to St. John the Divine, and I don't know if you guys heard the music that we were piping in here on the way in, but that is the score that we built for this show, which is a combination of riffs on the kind of disco classic Les Freaks by Chic, interlaced with Go Down Moses. And so that graphic was right as you entered the doors here on the right. That on the door was just a graphic that was built on the back of the paintings so that we could identify which painting was which, that representing the configuration of the 10 incremental commandments. So that's where we're going to start. And you heard a little bit of that kind of noise as a component of it. Jay, the priest, was just kind of the mindful facilitator, and that he's like the most liberal priest in the world up at St. John the Vine. We're going to move on to, I'm going to try to put this together for you, how I it kind of insists on complicating painting. Another show, also in London, was D.C., where I went to D.C. And I'll kind of reveal this, and then you'll see for yourself. But this is a still of a painting that has very dense paint that I'll give you a little detail of. And this is called The White House Unmoored. The White House Unmoored. And so this is just a shot of a video image that's projected on the painting. And that might sound a little absurd, and you could ask, well, why not just project the video on the wall like is normal? But I see it as really kind of a very simple, I have a very simple answer for that, and that is all artists who paint are concerned about the light that falls on their paintings. And so I just happen to bring a very kind of destabilized, complicated light to light the paintings. So, we're kind of backtracking just a little bit so you can get a feel for what these paintings are. This is a similar painting, a diptych called The Pear, but it's extruded paint in a very similar way. And this painting does not have a projection on it. And I just wanted you to see, like, okay, what do they look like? And here's a detail of a similar painting, just so you get a feel for kind of this very complicated surface. This is all oil paint that then has this gorgeous aluminum paint that they've stopped making because it's so toxic. But it's a beautiful paint that lies right down on oil, and it sets up this beautiful reflective surface that... Now I'm going to show you just how these pieces kind of operate. This is a videotape of a piece over time in the gallery. So what happens here is I make these light loops, and this is just this kind of jerky nighttime thing that happened when I was down there looking at the White House one night. And these things loop. And so they can be very, very short loops, as I'll show you one, or longer ones. But get kind of how it's working? I'm going to show you a couple more. There were 7 paintings in this show. This was one of my favorite. This is the image. This is the FDR statue down in D.C. And I just got kind of interested in looking at this, and I was just sitting there on a bench, and everybody comes by and checks in with FDR. They sit on his lap, or they poke him in the eye, or they do something. And so I decided that it had to be taped. And so what we come up with in this piece, this is a larger painting, pretty large painting for me. And so you walk in the gallery, and what you're kind of seeing is a projected photograph sitting on top of a photograph of a sculpture sitting on top of a painting. And this is a very long loop. This goes on for about an hour. I just kind of set up the camera on a tripod next to me, the video camera. And, that's the detail of what the painted surface looks like. And then this will just give you an idea of... So they're photographing their kid, and he's obviously hyperactive and needs medication. there's a lot of posing, and it's very heartwarming. So then this crowd will leave, and so it kind of regresses to this quiet non-event, and then some other party will move in, and they will do whatever they do to FDR. It's a very sweet piece. I used to be a little sweeter than I am now. Give you an idea of some of the other ones. This is more my temperament at the moment. This is Watergate. This is just a very slow pan from left to right. It's very kind of security looking. In the gallery, when they were documenting the piece, they set the camera a little off to the side so you'd get a feel of the painting in the space. And this is the most simple little loop, And this loop, on the other hand, is maybe a minute long, and it just pans back and forth. This is DuPont Circle. We're not going to look, but you know, if you know DuPont Circle, there's that incredible subway tunnel. And so this guy I just happened to follow up, and he was very busy the whole way up with his umbrella and getting ready for the weather, which was very naughty that day. But anyway, he gets to the top. You kind of reveal, the world reveals itself. It turns white. And he walks away. And then I took the loop and I flopped it so that the videotape runs in reverse. And so it's him going down into the tunnel. And at the bottom, it fades to black as he's at the deepest part of the tunnel. I'm just going to show you the rest of these, just so you have a... This is the Hoover Building, the FBI Hoover Building, and there's this kind of ominous pickup truck that just comes... This was edited to be like this, in this step editing. And as it moves out of the frame, we loop it, and it comes right back in from the other side. So this, too, is a very short loop. This is the National Zoo, which is a sad, sad place. And this elephant is just at this closed door, and it's just kind of neurotically... going back and forth. This is the final piece in this series. This is a National Christmas Tree. I happened to be down there when we were having power shortages. And so I was filming the Christmas tree, and it went dark, and all the kids start crying and carrying on. And I was like, well... Oops. Well, I went a little fast. I don't know if that was playing. I might have... Well, let's see. Is this... Yeah. Just to give you a little hint here, it also happens to be in the flight path. And so we were able to fine-tune through just a little touch of editing. These are not heavily edited, but see, the plane comes in, turns the light on, and it does the reverse, too. So it's the Christmas tree that is on and off. Ad infinitum. I just brought along, because, you know, I do insist that we're talking paintings. And so I just brought, just to prove it, I brought you some paintings. So we're just going to race through these, and these are oftentimes dragged into projects. I was going to say into service, but that's not right either. It's really about how I choose to light them, really. But they oftentimes stand on their own in a normal gallery setting. This is a big, again, a very big painting for me, maybe... 80, I think it's 60 by 80 by 60. And it has this, and then this is a very small painting. But that's not exactly what we're talking about tonight. We're talking about some of these more complicated affairs. This belongs to the modern. I don't know if it has ever been shown. I haven't heard anything about it. I told...
You're getting ready to reinstall the second floor.
Right, yeah. Where's that Moffat painting? I think what did it was when they bought this painting, I'd made the terrible mistake of sending a little note to Michael. And I said, that painting's going to look so fine on that cement wall. And that's the last I heard of it. Yeah, just not from me. What Barbara Jordan Wore, a piece that I originally did right down the road at the Texas Gallery in Houston, but it had one configuration down there, and I wasn't done with it, and it went somewhere else. This piece down there was, it kind of just sprung into my mind as the title and that space, which is very beautiful. And the paintings, it just kind of like, I was talking to Frederica, and I was like, you know, I have this show about Barbara Jordan in my head. And she said, okay, let's do that. Well, then I had to make it. And in the process of that, these are small kind of model paintings of what I was envisioning. And they came to pass. There were three paintings. Here is one of the paintings. I don't have the other two filled. These two, kind of 80 by 60. And so there were three paintings very similar to these, and then three photographs, which these are photographs that have been reframed, and these are taken in the Capitol building in Austin. And if you go down in the basement, you know, they do these shots every session, every 2 years. And so there's Barbara Jordan, the only woman, the only African-American, and the only African-American woman. So here's the next session. Where's Barbara Jordan? See Barbara Jordan? Right there. Same story. Some probably younger people won't quite remember Barbara Jordan. She's also in this one, too. I'm sure you can see it. Yeah, she's over here on the left. She was just somehow very important to me as a kid. And she died in 96, and I always kind of thought about her. And so then this was maybe in I don't really remember, maybe 2000, maybe, or I don't know, somewhere around there. So and as soon as she died, they came out with a couple of new biographies and everything, and so it was really in my mind. And you know, you can't really do a homage honorary thing these days in a contemporary gallery. You just don't do that. Well, I had to find a way to make this a show. So in the process of being down at TSU, which is where her archives reside in Houston, I was reminded of the Watergate hearings, where she became quite a national figure. And so I was looking at the videotape and loving it and thinking, you know, how am I an abstract painting show? How's this going to work? And so anyway, this, by the way, is the first projection light loop piece that I didn't do it for the Texas Gallery. We got through that with the three abstract paintings and the three photographs, and everybody was kind of like, okay, all right. If you say so. I remember Ian, her partner, who can be quite a pill, saying, if you say so. But I couldn't kind of quit. And about the same time, the MCA in Chicago, Elizabeth Smith, asked me to do a project there. And so she was in the studio, and I was kind of playing with this in the studio because I had gotten the videotape of the Watergate hearings from the Library of Congress, and I was working on these gold paintings at the moment, and I had one set up with projecting on it, and I was seriously contemplating it, and she said, that's the project, isn't it? And, you know, in that situation, you kind of say, yes. Not really. It was a little more complicated than that, but this did come to be the project. And so what we did there was it still, for some reason, became a series of three paintings with the three photographs and then three additional paintings, which were these gold paintings. And what we did was we, instead of like the Le Freak organ weirdo stuff, from that we just piped in straight her speech. And so what I'm going to do is you're going to hear a bit of it.
Here. And thanking you for giving the union members of this committee the glorious opportunity of sharing the pain of this embrace. Mr. Chairman, you are a strong man, and it has not been easy. But we have tried as best we can to give you as much assistance as possible. Earlier today, we heard the beginning of the preamble to the Constitution of the United States. We, the people. It's a very eloquent beginning. But when that document was completed on the 17th of September in 1787, I was not included in that We the People. I felt somehow for many years that George Washington and Alexander Hamilton just left me out by mistake. But through the process of amendment, interpretation, and court decision, I have finally been included in We the People. Today, I am an inquisitor, and my probably would not be fictional and would not overstate the solemnness that I feel right now. My faith in the Constitution is whole, it is complete, it is total, and I am not going to sit here and be an idle spectator to the delusion, the subversion, the destruction of the Constitution.
We stopped there for the moment, but you'll get a little more. I didn't quite set this up correctly or completely, but when Barbara Jordan starts talking, that's the end. The reason I showed DC first is because I do have those kind of, the gallery supplied me with those kind of beautiful shots of the pieces working in action. I don't have that in this presentation for this. So you just have to take my word for it. These are all, again, this was the first piece. It was very experimental and very, I just grabbed a little bit of that tape. We looped it. And so these are all very short loops. And so Barbara Jordan is animated here and defocused because I was like dealing with this, like, you know, I can't really like do a portrait thing. It's got to be about the painting and the light. And so all three pieces. It's defocused, but you just see her red dress for one thing, you get the idea that she's there. And the sound is straight, and the image is just moving. And then there was a shot of the galley, which was quite incredible. This woman here, again, a very short little take. This was in... I can't exactly remember the year. 72, I think. 72. She's smoking, and she lights the cigarette, and so the loop is just her endlessly lighting a cigarette. And you can just barely see it, but it's a nice little flare that happens on this gold reflective paint. Here is... this, I believe, is part of the final shot, which... We're going to listen to the last minute and a half of her speech, which is very groovy. And it's kind of a wide pan of the committee. This was the Judiciary Committee who was deciding what was going to happen with Nixon. So.
These assertions, false assertions, impeachable, those who misbehave, those who behave amiss or betray the public trust. James Madison again at the Constitutional Convention, a president is impeachable if he attempts to subvert the Constitution. The Constitution charges the president with the task of taking care that the laws be faithfully executed. And yet, the President has counseled his aide to commit perjury, willfully disregard the secrecy of grand jury proceedings, conceal surreptitious entry, attempt to compromise a federal judge, while publicly displaying his cooperation with the processes of criminal justice. A President is impeachable if he attempts to subvert the Constitution. If the impeachment provision in the Constitution of the United States will not reach the offenses charged here, then perhaps that 18th century Constitution should be abandoned to a 20th century paper shredder. Has the President committed offenses and planned and directed and acquiesced in a course of conduct which the Constitution will not tolerate? That's the question. We know that. We know the question. We should now forthwith proceed to answer the question. It is reason and not passion which must guide our deliberations, guide our debates, and guide our decisions.
That's what Barbara Jordan wore. Hippie shit, Terry mentioned. Let me just go right into it. I was kind of playing with a curveball in that I sent out this, what I consider a very beautiful card. This is a property up in Canada, up in Nova Scotia. And so this card was very pretty. The show wasn't. I have this kind of gruesome, foggy slide, which when I was putting this together, I was like, you know, there's something perfect about this slide because it's kind of ghastly. The show is kind of ghastly. So what we did was in Marianne's old space, which was a big square, I cut it down. We added this wall, and I hung all the works on that wall. And so it was this very compressed space. And we also overlit it, like, terribly with these two. There's two lines of fluorescence, four tubes running down the length of this gallery, which I think at this point, it was about 12. We compressed it down to, I think it was about 12 feet, if I remember right. And it was about 40 or 50 feet long with all the paintings along one wall. And then here's kind of from the other end looking at the other way, and that's where you came in. So between the light and the space, it was completely uncomfortable, except I do have this, I put these two little benches that you could sit because there was a reason to sit, and that is because we added, again, sound to this show. And so what we had was just, you know, obviously it's a riff on some sort of like hideous retail space. And three people, Gail Brown, Bob Conti, and Marcus Milius, who's a really great harmonica player. Gail's also a harmonica player. She works for me and does a lot of fabrication for me. And then Bob Conti's a great harmonica player. I had this idea of doing these anti-war songs, famous songs, in harmonica. So we went back up to St. John the Divine because the acoustics are so beautiful and recorded four songs. And I'm going to play you a little bit of one of them. But here's just a couple of shots on the installation itself. I have a couple of detail hole shots. Since I brought this wall in, we were able to drill these holes all the way through. And so there was this nice black void. But if you went around the back, all it was that's the trash can covering the hole. But it worked. So here's a little bit of Marvin Gaye's famous song. Okay, I have a hard time stopping that because it was such a sad show. So we did four songs. We did, of course, that song, Buffalo Springfield, two other famous ones, you'd know them. And so that the reason I hung there is because that shot, that kind of crummy, I can't go back to that shot of the music. Well, is about where the benches are. And although it looks kind of vast across there, it, like I said, it's only about 12 feet deep across there. And so, you know, if you took the time to kind of sit there, it worked. It worked. It worked. That's all I'm going to say about that one. Easy Clean, I don't yet have that in here, but I'm just going to show you one. It's a real painting show in the historical sense. No noise, no sound, no music, no benches even. Can't sit down. But it's got two components to it, and one is this kind of these kind of overly wrought, overly painted, over the top paintings with these glory holes, and this is a cobalt blue painting that is quite a charmer. But then you go into the back, and it's again I'm kind of back to my cruelty, where there are these very stripped bare paintings, which are cruel. We're back to Impeach again. It's a recurring thought of mine. And this was strictly a sound piece. No paintings. The invitation was in fact a bumper sticker. And this was the back of the bumper sticker. And so you could peel off the invitation and use your bumper sticker if you wanted to. And this is, if you know Marianne's new space, there's a project room as you walk into the gallery. And it has this beautiful sliding steel door. And so on this door, we put this text, because this was, again, one of those situations where I just stumbled across this sound piece of, I saw this on TV, John Lewis, and again, back to the Library of Congress and dug it up, and just made a sound piece. So what happens is you walk in the door. To your left is this big sliding door. You open that, walked into her small project room, and what we had done in there was put in five speakers, and I had kind of processed this sound in a surround sound kind of thing, and we just put that padding on the wall to kind of control the sound, and there were five speakers, we can get a pretty good sense of it. The acoustics and the sound and everything here, and John in the booth, they're so great that we can get kind of a good idea of it. It's not kind of half as intense because it was generally kind of a private experience. You'd close the door behind you. There's these high lights up there, and so it's a very beautiful room, and you stand in the middle, and you'd hear John Lewis, and I thought it was an appropriate place to kind of stop here, because it's all about the vote. And so, John, are you there? Let's listen to that.
Speaker, I recognize for 1 minute the distinguished gentleman from Georgia the minority deputy whip, Mr. General Gillis.
Chairman, it's recognized for 1 minute.
Mr. Speaker, today is a very sad day for this House. This morning when I got up, I wanted to cry, but the tears would not come. Before we cast this one little vote, we all should ask the question, is this good for America? Is this good for the American people? Is this good for this institution? When I was growing up in rural Alabama in the 40s and the 50s, as a young child, near the shotgun house where my aunt lived, one afternoon, an unbelievable storm occurred. The wind started blowing. The rain fell on the tin top roof of this house. Lightning started flashing, thunder started rolling. And my aunt asked us all to come into this house and to hold hands. We held it.
Apologize.
And as the wind continued to blow, we were both in the middle of the house.
So we're going to stop there, but just with one comment, and that is that, as you can imagine, doing a contemporary art piece that is fundamentally patriotic was the most horrifying thing, the most horrifying one I've done yet. But it's got the content. So we're stopping there. Thank you very much. That went fast. I forgot to tell you guys to ask questions any time through the whole thing, but now you got me. Anything you want to talk about?
I'm curious about with Hibisha. I guess I want. I can't be in that space. I'm sensing the space, you know, the way you're describing it, but. Are with the car and with the title of the piece and then the given visual and the sound and the compressed space and all of that, are you subverting kind of the expectation that might come with the car?
It was definitely a bait and switch.
Well,
tried and true marketing concept.
What was the response in terms of people talking about that experience?
Hated the space. You know, it was very cruel. I remember the opening where, you know, you do these openings and either there's a warm, inviting space and you hang out in the thing or you split and hang out on the street. This was an opening where everybody was just out on the street. It was a very hard space.
Because I see the surfaces of those paintings, and I don't know if those paintings were like the others that you showed us the close-up, as being really seductive and wanting to move in.
Well, they are that, and you do go up, and you do want to touch them or anything else, which, you know, they're sturdy. But I don't mean that you walked in and you ran out screaming. But you couldn't stay too long. I mean, the four songs only run about 12 minutes, and if you stick through all four songs, you've pretty well had it. I mean, it's kind of exhausting. You know those fluorescent spaces that are very grueling and very tiring. And it was that. These didn't flicker. You know, we had good electrical. But you get that feeling like it's pulsing right through your brain and you have to get out. It's like smelling gas or something. You know, you just have a natural impulse to run. But it's what I wanted to do. I mean, I think in some ways it's about that Canadian shot. You know, we're talking about the back to nature movement, you know, we're rekindling our hippie beginnings. And so it was strictly really about contrast of natural beauty next to otherwise. Yes, sir.
To pick up on the contrast, have you ever thought of taking kind of a negative space like that and having a positive space somewhere else and seeing how the movement takes place, you know, people moving back and forth?
Well, in some ways, oddly, this current show, Easy Clean, it does have two spaces, and they're completely different. Not as dramatic in its kind of temperature as like that is. But ironically, I hadn't quite noticed it. The proprietor who did my show there and the one who did it in the new space said, oh, yeah, when I came in with the new paintings for the Easy Save, they said, oh, yeah, we know how you like this. It's all against one wall, right? Well, I hadn't even quite put it together that I was doing the same thing. But Marianne's new space has a kind of a humanly scale front gallery where I hung the cobalt painting and two other paintings like that, which are very traditionally hung. I kind of like Deborah Burke, a very fine architect in New York, did this space, and it's a beautiful space. But rarely will artists let the space kind of carry any weight. You know, it's kind of our job to move in there and destroy it. And Marianne is like, fine, do it. But I wanted to do this very kind of beautiful show out front in this humanly sized gallery. And then her back gallery is this huge, daunting space that I quit one time. I was supposed to do the show earlier, and I just said, I can't do it, I can't do it, the space is killing me. And the best I could do with it, in the end, was to do a far more negative contemplation of there's 11 paintings back there, all against one wall, and but your question is not about what I did with the space. Your question is about how did people deal with it. I haven't done exactly as you proposed. I've drifted off into my current show, but there's a dichotomy there. I haven't noticed how people... I didn't notice at the opening. I don't know how people are really reacting to the space. There's also no fluorescence. It's all kind of beautifully lit. I wanted this dark passage, which is kind of subtle, but it's dark passage between the front gallery and the back gallery, the smaller show and the bigger show. And it's more in a kind of an emotional shift that happens. I haven't seen anybody run out. And I haven't seen anybody love the kind of easier front space either, the much more seductive. I mean, they're a little rude, these paintings. But the back ones are just cruel in their kind of barrenness and bleakness. Yes?
How did you achieve the thick, furry look of the paintings as in the cutoff?
It's all extruded paint, which I'll just push paint through anything, and it is just good oil paint that has so much body that it stands right up. The paintings are painted flat, and so there's always a gravitational element that either works with me or against me or whatever. I mean, I just work with it. But those are painted down. The paint is lifted up, and then it falls, if I'm lucky, in a particular way. And that's what you're seeing there. Let me go back to that. Yeah, so you can see it along the edges of the painting. Well, you know, it just falls off the edges and falls into the holes, and then stands up, if I'm lucky, every place else. Ed.
Following on that question, address that process. I mean, those are incredibly difficult, complex paintings, and the patience it must require as you're executing them. And, I mean, you can't fall into it as you're working, or it's immediately destroyed.
Well, a lot of paintings don't work, as you know. It's an incredibly tedious process. It's kind of a hateful process, but, you know, you get your music going or you get your something going and you do it. They're very slow and they're very tedious, and even when I'm doing them, I'm like questioning my own purpose, you know, really. They're shockingly tedious, but the funny thing about making these paintings, these types of paintings, is they're a lot painful to do. But as soon as they're done, somehow it fades away. I think it's like being shot. I've never been shot. But I think, you know, like the immediate shock is like overwhelming, and then, you know, I'm shot. But it just fades away. And then and I like the painting, so I just kind of keep doing them. There was another question back there.
Yeah, I had a question about the last audio piece. Would the sound be playing continuously in the space, or would it only trigger when somebody closed the door or so that one person got it?
No, we weren't that sophisticated. It was on a loop. Mm-hmm. There was quite a dead part between. So generally there was movement kind of in and out of the room because it clearly ends when it ends. You know, I mean, it's over. So there'd be movement and it's also such a short piece in a lot of ways. I don't know if it felt short tonight, but you know, it's two minutes-ish. That it was more about a natural flow of people moving in and out of the space. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't obligatory to be in there by yourself. It had its own sociology if there was more than one person in there. But I loved it alone, you know. I loved it best when it was alone. Yes?
I was wondering, what's more important to you, to think of yourself as a painter or to think of yourself as a political artist, or can you even separate the two?
Well, you know, we've all taken a huge rap for the political artist thing. It's like being a gay artist. You know, it's incredibly limiting and troublesome, although it happens. And I there's no doubt about it, kind of. But painter is what it is. It's all really kind of all about what you want to bring to a painting. And I have traditionally kind of tried to expand that, you know. As you can see, I'll kind of go anywhere. As long as it interests me kind of on a personal level, and how that filter works, though, is not that it's just kind of my own bullshit in my head. These are kind of large social, political, even global issues of content. So I'm a painter. Thank you again. Thank you very much.